Getting us started, so you're all set to get started.
Very good, thank you. This is Commissioner Hoffman chairing regular meeting of the Bureau of Public Works on March the 10th at 5 p.m. or 5:17 to be exact. So with that, I would ask if there are any public comments. Anybody from the public on the call? Hearing none, we do need a motion to take care of passing on the minutes of the previous meeting. I can have that.
So moved, Sweezy.
Thank you, Mr. Sweezy.
Second. Second, Wolf.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Hearing none. Move on to the first action item, item number 4. And I'm assuming that someone from Mr. Curley's department will have some. Correct? Maybe Scott.
Mike Curley is. I saw he didn't turn on his camera, and we're getting some background noise. Mike, have you been speaking? Because I haven't heard anything yet.
You got that.
Yeah, Mike. That headset's not working. Do you want to try to call in using the phone?
Mike,
now?
Yes, that's better, Mike.
Sorry about that. Good evening, Commissioners. This is Mike Curley, Manager of Technical Services.
Thank you, Mike.
We received on March 4th. We received a encroachment request from BL Companies, who's working with Amazon.com Services LLC. The leasee of the property, and WE 100 Helmsford Way, the owner of the property. WE stands for Winstanley Enterprises. They're requesting to encroach upon MDC sewer easements containing a 10-inch sanitary line and a 21-inch trunk sewer located on the property so that they can make loading dock reconstruction improvements, as well as build a new parking lot along the east side of the building. So they're currently building a warehouse package and distribution facility for Amazon. Again, if you turn to your package, there's an illustration so you can see the amount of the sewer system impacted by the work. Looks significant, but quite frankly, it's not that much. Currently, the encroachment items include clearing and grubbing, and that's mainly dealing with the parking lot, the new parking lot. They're also having to fill up to 4 feet and excavate up to 2 feet in certain areas. Currently, that lot is really hilly. It also has a wetland area, so in order to give us proper cover and to be able to build the utilities they're proposing on the parking lot, they do have to build it up. They also have to raise 2 manhole framing covers and also cross our sanitary sewer easement with a 24-inch storm drain. So all in all, it affects approximately 1,400 linear feet of easement area, but we think a lot of these improvements are quite minor. They have we do not expect them to have to harm the sewer in any way, and to protect the MDC as well as to give us access and protection of the sewer system, financial protections and liability protections. The owner, Winstanley Enterprises, has agreed to the 7 conditions listed in this resolution. So we also. We also feel this is very feasible, so we do recommend that the that the MDC execute an encroachment agreement with Wind Stanley Enterprises for this project, and also file those that encroachment agreement with the Town of Windsor Land Records. So if there's any questions, I can answer them now.
Commissioner, questions?
Mr. Curley?
Yes.
When you walk through southern part of Hartford on in the project areas, who do they mistake you for?
For Mr. DiBella. That happened with you, actually. In the Franklin Avenue area.
They do the same thing for me, Crow. They make it.
That's right. I'm taking whatever comes your way. I'll take it for you.
Further questions? Commissioners?
It is straightforward. I move the motion to approve it.
Thank you, Mr. Patel. Second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor of the recommendation going forward?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Excuse me, Chairman. This is Commissioner Vecino. I want to abstain from the vote.
I'm sorry. I should have called that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Very good. Item number five, a second encroachment agreement is petitioned. And again, if we can have Mike Curley.
Thank you, Commissioners. January 5th, we received a encroachment request from VHB Engineers on behalf of Gold Coast Properties CT1 LLC, the current owner, future owner of the property, and Fen Road Associates LLC, the current owners of the property, so that they could construct utilities, having to cross our MDC sewer easement to tie into utilities in Cedar Street. The proposed, I do want to point out that there is a Fen Road Associates currently owns the property, and they're selling it to Gold Coast Properties CT1, and they're currently engaged in a purchase and sale agreement, and they plan on closing that in the near future. So Fen Road Associates has given permission to Gold Coast to submit this request. So again, the encroachment items are just three items. And I want to remind commissioners that in this area here, the water comes from New Britain. So the connections have to cross an MDC sewer easement, which is located parallel with Cedar Street. And it's unavoidable to connect to New Britain Water, both their domestic and fire service, as well as their gas utility.
Okay.
Are there any questions?
Any questions from
Commissioner Patel? It's straightforward procedural things. I move that motion.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And abstentions?
Commissioner Vecino, abstention again.
Thank you, sir. Item number six. This discussion, I will admit, I have no background information, so I'm going to immediately pass it on to Scott.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we have with Tom Tyler, who's our director of facilities. Tom used to be the manager of the wastewater facilities. And as you know, back in 2016 or 2017, we created we had Tom take over the, not only the wastewater facilities, but also the drinking water facilities for a lot of good reasons. But revenue is extremely important to the ad valorem of our MDC towns. We're averaging a significant $7 million a year. And I've mentioned this before, and PFAS is a dynamic thing that is not regulated, but it is a household world word across New England, especially. The PFAS is creating a market, and the market is low, and we set up a lot of different local communities, and we make money from it. But what has happened in the market is because of PFAS, a lot we burn our sludge. So our sludge comes in through the pipes. It comes in from trucks. We process it. We dry it. We burn it. Others across the country use digestion, and it's a chemical process which basically leaves you with a byproduct that is not fully burned. It's not fully – the energy hasn't been fully exhausted from it. So it's a product that has to – you have to do something with it. And basically a lot of communities across the country do what they call land application. So they take it and they spread it across farming fields and use it for – fertilizing. But as soon as PFAS happened, which was really started in really the summer of 2000, communities across New England, anyone who was digesting sludge and not burning it, because EPA was trying to shut down every incinerator across the country through the SSI rule, they slowly realized that no one. So our typical rate structure, and I'm just going to give you an example. We were charging Springfield about $60 a ton, and it went to $90 a ton in a blink of an eye, only because the market. I mentioned this before at our meetings. I had New York come to my office and offer me $120 a ton to secure capacity in our system. I've reported the fact that Vermont is actually getting paid $100 a ton to accept sludge from other parts of New England. So it's extremely dynamic. It's like working the stock market every day. Tom Tyler and his staff does an amazing job. So Tom's going to kind of go through the revenue stream on this. It's only going to make us more and more money. And I mentioned to you in the past that we're actually trying desperately with EPA Boss, State of Connecticut, and our other partners across New England to actually get permitted more incineration, which would, one, help PFAS and also help and generate significant revenue across the MDC district. So with that, Tom, you there?
I am there, Scott. Thank you very much. So good afternoon, Commissioners. Tom Tyler, Director of Facilities. So Scott and Chris Levesque asked me to put together a brief presentation just to talk a little bit about our solids receiving revenue generation and our heat recovery. And I know that some of you are new to the Commission and you may not be aware of these two processes. So I'm going to go through it quickly. So we've been taking in solids from outside since the early 90s, and we currently take them in from other facilities in Connecticut, Massachusetts, and New York. We take in addition to the wastewater, sludge, septage from, you know, homes that get their septic tank pumped out, industrial waste, and grease. We take all these products as is. We incorporate them into our treatment process. All solids, as Scott mentioned, are incinerated, and it does provide a good, consistent source of revenue. You can see from the graph in the upper right-hand corner of the slide that we really have had a focus over the last few years of improving our ability to process sludge combined with the market factors that Scott has mentioned, and you can see that we've more than doubled our revenue from this sludge receiving process. So, you know, where does the revenue come from? The majority of it is from sludge that other treatment plants do not have the ability to fully process. So they would be facilities that they can make the sludge, they remove it from the water, but they can't dry it and incinerate it in the manner in which we do. There's also a small industrial component. Septage provides a little bit under $1 million a year in revenue. And then there's a smaller amount from grease that we take in, and that's represented on the pie chart in the upper left-hand corner. So when we talk about where those solids come from, if you look at the chart on the lower right-hand side, the district, because we have four wastewater treatment plants, Hartford being the largest in the state of Connecticut, you know, we produce a fair amount of solids ourselves. So about 40% of what we process is our own solids. A little bit more than 30% of that comes from other Connecticut facilities. We take sludge from a little bit over 20 other treatment plants in the state of Connecticut. We also provide some disposal capacity from several facilities in Massachusetts. Scott mentioned Springfield. That's a fairly large contributor. And then we take some in from four plants in Westchester County in New York. And the Massachusetts and New York contribution, as you can see, is approximately the same. So that kind of gives you a summary of what we process and where it comes from. So another key element that ties together with the solids processing is our electrical production facility. So we started operating this in 2014. We've been running it since then nonstop, and we've produced every year well in excess of $1 million of direct savings through our steam power plant. So all the heat from burning the solids that used to go into the atmosphere, we now turn into a green, renewable source of energy. Since we started production in 2014, we produced more than 80 million kilowatt hours, directly saving our ratepayers over $10 million to date. So when we began this, that also made us increase our focus on how we process solids. So on the slide that we showed how the income has doubled, that's because we knew heat recovery was coming on, and so we changed the way in which we run the Hartford treatment plant. So very significant change in the operating culture at the facility, and we went to a complete 24/7 processing because we knew we wanted to make electricity 24/7, so we improved how we handled solids. I know in the past that you've heard Scott and Chris talk about doing more with less. Well, I think this is really a great example. Scott, years ago in the 2012-13 time, really challenged us to embody that spirit of more with less. And so we began our heat recovery. We did not add any staff, operations, or maintenance. We take care of a very large, complex facility. We do use all the power that we make on site, and we meet about 40% of our needs. But it's not simply an operations and maintenance, victory here. It's really a complete team effort for the district on how we do the solids and the electrical production. So we have staff from engineering that works on this facility. They help us keep things running right. They help us rehab all the big equipment. So engineering is a key partner for us. We also have procurement as a key partner for us in that they help us with contracts for rehabbing our equipment. They make sure that we have the supplies, parts, and pieces that we need. So it really, it's a wonderful example of doing more with less and a real team effort and how we empowered our folks and challenged them to perform better. And I think the results are very clear. With much fewer staff than we used to have, we've doubled revenue. We've made millions of dollars in electricity. We haven't had a single safety issue related to solids processing or the steam power plant since we began production. So I think it's a very nice story for the district, and I'm happy to share those details with you today. And that's all I had, but if there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Thank you, Tom.
Tom?
Yes, sir.
Your revenue does not include the charges or work which you do for a MDC burning. Is it included or says that it's additional?
Yeah. So this shows the revenue from the solids receiving, and that would be the septage, industrial waste, solids from other plants, and the grease. So last year we took in over $7,200,000 in revenue just on solids receiving. And we took those solids that we made $7 million from, and we made more than $1 million worth of electricity with them. So combined for last year, between revenue and savings, it would be in excess of $8 million.
And that $1 million for the operational expense of the sewer side of the system is about $98 million. That $8 million reduced the cost of the town directly.
You're breaking up.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Bill DiBella. Tom, you produced over 80 megawatts of electricity since 2014. Is that 80 megawatts or 80 megawatts?
Well, it's a kilowatt hours.
Oh,
so
kilowatt,
it's 80
okay.
million kilowatt hours.
Kilowatt hours, that's what I
yes, sir.
Said. Yeah. And at the conversion on megawatts, what would it be?
You would divide it by 1,000.
1,000, so it would be 80 megawatts.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, I visited the facility, and you have done an excellent job. All of you deserve a lot of acclaim from all commissioners.
Commissioner Patel, Commissioner DiBella had a question I don't think was completed.
Tom?
Let me.
So
kilowatts and megawatts are a different unit than kilowatt hours?
Yeah, I mean, typically when you pay for energy, you pay for a kilowatt hour. So that's right. How we typically show that on, you know, our savings is in and energy production okay. is in kilowatt hours. The power plant produces approximately 1.5 megawatts of power.
A year.
That's its production rate, 24/7.
In 1 year, you're saying.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. It's pretty close. In 6 years, that's better than it's only about eight or 10 megawatts is what I'm saying, not 80. In megawatts, yes, not megawatt kilowatt hours. In megawatts, that's about eight, nine?
The plant was about 4 megawatts, and then because of the Clean Water Project, had to increase the
Yeah, you're using it internally. I understand.
The plant's probably a 8 megawatt facility. It needs 8 megawatts to run. We're producing about 1.7 megawatts of power from the heat recovery. The kilowatt per hour is just kilowatts hours of so many hours did you produce so many kilowatts? But yes, you're absolutely right. The important part of this discussion is that, Tom, how many staff did you have in 2006?
We had approximately 75 in 2005. So in 2015, we probably had in the high 60s, maybe 70, 68, 70.
And what did you have now?
As of last year, we had 57. Not all positions were filled.
So the point is we're actually we're running a facility that's twice the size that it was. We're producing more power, and we're generating more revenue with less staff. And that goes to, as Tom said, a lot of hard work by intelligent directors and managers to make it happen. and do more with less is what's happening.
Yes, sir.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. Can you not speak about increasing the capacity and putting another plant in the future?
Yes. So we have had lots of this after the incident with the, obviously the lake spill and the incident with the airport. And we believe, and Deep believes, and even EPA believes that one of the solutions to PFAS is really incineration. Now, as Tom mentioned, the reason why those revenue streams are going up is because we're starting to see the benefits of the market. You know, the market is driving this discussion, and because of PFAS, we're starting to see. Like Springfield went up $30, you know, so that's 30-some-odd percent for doing nothing other than PFAS. And so our goal is to really partner with the state of Connecticut, as difficult as that might be, and have a solution. EPA and the state of Connecticut have been trying to get rid of incineration for years. Because of air quality. That's why the pesticide rule was implemented in 2010. Unfortunately, in 2020, they realized PFAS is a major environmental problem. They realized that incineration is the solution to that problem. If you burn more than 1,400 degrees, you could burn PFAS. Now, we don't know if that's true. We only know that Deep has said that publicly through the Hartford Current. So the question is the MDC be a partner in with the regulators in the solution to PFAS, but the way in which we would have to do that would be able to build more capacity at the Hartford plant with incineration. Now, prior to PFAS, we have had discussions months before PFAS happened at the airport. I was having discussions with regional leaders in Boston and Springfield and Providence about building excess capacity, because the excess capacity just is not there in New England because of the fact the regulators are getting rid of it. And now PFAS has shut the door, and I think the regulators are more willing to accept the fact that the incineration could be the solution to a bigger environmental problem. We can accept PFAS from the landfill if we were paid properly, and we can properly burn it, or you could leachate it into the river like what's happening in Hartford or in Rocky Hill or in other landfill areas that are adjacent to waterways. This unfortunately is going to be a long-term battle. I do believe that the state of Connecticut and EPA agree that incineration is a solution, but their environmental and their makeup makes it difficult for them to admit it, and therefore it's going to take them time and pain to realize that GMC can be a solution to the problem.
Commissioner Hoffman?
Yes, sir. Commissioner
Ray Sweezy. Tom, I'd like to ask a question. This system was put in 2014 for the heat recovery side.
Yes, sir.
What's the life of this kind of equipment? The technology, I was just reading an article on this. I didn't even know you were bringing it up. The technology has changed so much. Is there newer technologies out there that could even be better, what's the life of this technology that we
have? That's a really good question, Commissioner Sweezy. So the technology that we use, steam power, is a very old and proven technology. And when we went into design on this, we were wastewater operators engaged in designing an electrical power plant. That's not our area of expertise. And so we really wanted to use proven technology, and we've been using steam to make electricity for decades in our country. So It's a very robust process, but it's very, very high tech. So it's completely automated, and we can run the facility without staffing two shifts a day. So if you went over there right now, the facility is dark and there's not staff in there running it. So the technology application on a very old, proven, robust, you know, technology of steam is quite different. So when we design projects, we always look for, you know, what's the return? And so we didn't want to build a facility that was going to fall apart before we made back our investment in it. So components, certain things like the turbine, the boilers, we rehab them on a regular basis to keep them in peak operating condition. But we believe the life of the turbine is approximately 40 years. Other significant pieces of equipment in the facility would be 20 years. But I would add that we have many, many pieces of equipment at the Hartford plant that are many, many decades old, and is a testament to our maintenance staff and the support that we get from engineering that keeps equipment in peak running condition for many years past when other people would simply trash it and get a new piece of equipment. So we expect a very long life from this building. 25, 30, 40 years would not be atypical for a well-maintained power plant.
Thank you very much. I have one other question. Could you go back to your first slide where you show the percents of Yeah, perfect.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, the second slide. Okay, you show 4% of greases. Now, is that grease and fats that are coming from restaurants, the waste oils and fats from restaurants, or is that something else?
This is typically grease trap cleanings. It would not be the fryer later oil type of oils that you would think about from a restaurant fryer, but more of grease trap cleanings.
Okay,
so
thank you.
Do
we take the grease? Do we take greases from the restaurants that are picked, you know, that are picked up by local companies?
We do not typically take them as a normal source. We can, but you know, there can be problems in processing them. So we do like to service our member town facilities that want to dispose of grease, but we don't aggressively seek grease from outside sources.
Okay, thank you very much, Tom.
Yes, sir.
Is the chairman?
Chairman.
Commissioner Torres?
Torres.
Yes.
Yeah.
Suppose that we increase the processing of the PFAS down the road, and is there a concern for any additional environmental issues that may arise? And how will we prepare for making sure that we monitor any additional issues that could arise from the increase in the PFAS incineration?
Yes, sir. That's a very good question. We have a very, very strict air permit requirements that we meet not only from the state but from the federal government. We stay well within all air quality parameters. And Scott has mentioned our ongoing work with EPA Region 1 and new standards that they imposed on our facility that is, you know, approaching 50 years of age. And we have done such a good job maintaining and keeping our controls, the automation up to date, that our older incinerator can meet all new monitoring conditions that the federal government has recently come out with. So we're very comfortable that we can comply. And on many parameters, we are well below the standards. So we run very, very clean. And we do keep a lot of effort on our compliance with our air permits.
Tom, can I just clarify? Scotch, if I just clarify, Tom is correct. All of our permits that are required, and even the new requirements of SSI rule, SSI rule does not address PFAS. So just remember, PFAS is not regulated. I've mentioned it before. I was in Boston February of 2009, and we were discussing PFAS with EPA, and the EPA told us, meaning all of the utilities in New England, that they were not planning to develop any regulations on PFAS in anytime soon range, because it's so unknown. So is we are in full compliance with all of the regulations that exist today. But to Tom's point, I just want to make this, some commissioners might remember this. I first got here and we were talking about building a design build recovery plant that, thank God, we didn't build. And that recovery plant was going to be built by a contractor, and we were going to basically rent it and own it after a 20-year period. We went through that process, and regional authority, which is our sister agency in New Haven, and New Haven actually built a heat recovery plant that actually sat dormant for almost 2 years because it didn't work properly. And to my point to you, the MDC wants to make sure that we do, done correctly. Our due diligence is at the highest level. And so when we do something, we have fully investigated and exercised our engineering efforts on that process. So the reason why our heat recovery plant is so effective, because we went through the lessons learned of NAPE, and everything that they did wrong, we incorporated it into our design. So, I have to make that point. But to the question, Commissioner Torres, we are not required, and there is no regulation of PFAS at this point.
Thank you. Just another question to follow up on that. Over the years, there's been a lot of pushback on the issue of the air quality, in Hartford, and the issue of the prevalence of a high degree of asthma among especially children and that sort of thing. And and I'm a proponent of finding ways to increase a revenue source, for MDC to obviously lower other costs to our member towns. So I think doing something with the PFAS, if we can, which is a great idea. However, on the other hand, not having regulations for PFAS and not knowing, what the consequences, could be, creates, a concern that I would have to defend, for instance, for people come up to me and come and say, what are you doing? You don't know what's going into the air. You don't know what the regulations are. What are you doing to make sure that the people are safe? And Hartford is a host, to member towns, and we do, and very glad to do so. But we need to make sure that we prepare for those questions, that we go the extra steps to safeguard against any potential, issue that may arise from the unknown. And I know that's a difficult thing to do, but I'm putting the question out there because I just don't know.
Commissioner, if I just add, I agree 100%. So environmental justice, before we ever could even consider putting another incinerator in the Hartford area, we would have to get consensus from DEEP and from environmental justice to do so. So I agree 100%. Our argument would be exactly that. It's that I have no idea. I only know what I read. What I have read is PFAS is in pizza boxes. So the pizza boxes we've been eating for contains PFAS. Then you don't have to burn it. You don't have to consumant to know that your PFAS is from PFAS. Our position would be, if we ever got to this point, which would be a huge debate, would be, does it make sense for the landfill in Hartford, the landfill in Rocky Hill, to continue to leach PFAS into the Connecticut River, or does it make sense to find a way to actually burn it to some level that the environmental justice and the environmentalists agree is a betterment than what's happening right now? And I agree with you 100%. We're not going to get any support to do any kind of additional incineration unless the environmental justice groups agree with us. 100%.
Scott, Mr. Chairman, Scott, just to add on to that, I believe it's April or July of 2022, Mura will be closing down the existing garbage plant, which is taking in about 500 to 550,000 tons a year. There's a Hartford task force that we've been working with, and what they've done is they've come out, the mayor's, this is just this week, in a meeting with DEEP, and stated that they would be receptive to a smaller facility in the South Meadows, and it would have to be a non-burn technology. In other words, not a mass burn, because they've got concerns over the discharge issue. So there's going to be probably some excess capacity to burn within the statutory language or within the clean air, and based on what they're doing with a new facility and also being in the South Meadows. So you're right. It would have to meet all of those standards, but they look to be improving, not increasing in density. So that might give us some latitude on the incineration of sludge.
Yes.
Commissioner Torres, did you get your question answered fully?
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Commissioner Chairman Hoffman. Ray Sweezy again. Hey, Scott, could you give us an update? Not tonight, but we have that problem where we have to, the three incinerators or the towers there, we have to do something with. Federal government's requiring.
Yep.
How's that going along? We haven't heard anything on that in quite a few months.
Yeah. Real quick, as part of our hope for WERDA for stimulus package or we have put in $35 million, which we think we only need about $5 million, $10 million to improve the system that would meet the standard of SSI rule. But we are working through with EPA on complying with the SSI rule. Bureaucracy is everyone's working from home except the MDC, and so we're just kind of working through the details. But we will probably spend upwards of $5 to $10 million to improve the incinerator emissions controls to comply with the SSI rule. We have asked for $5 million. It's actually off just a website for clean water funding in anticipation of any kind of infrastructure bill or WERDA bill. We are working through those issues.
Okay, thank you.
You're breaking up.
Sorry.
Further questions, commissioners? If that's the case, suggest we move on to item 7 for that discussion. And I would ask that we probably have Scott again to give us a little background.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So this was really for the tour of DPW. It was really just an update, a reminder of what we had approved in January, because as you know, as I said in the Water Bureau, typically, you know, we set the rates and then the rate structure doesn't really get until January, February, and then the commissioners don't really get complaints until March. So it was more of an update as to what was already approved. Go through those rates with you. We're going to focus on the big ones. We're going to focus on the ones that change dramatically rather than all of them. Go ahead, Chris.
Chris, you might be muted.
Chris Levesque.
Sorry, thank you. Chris Levesque, MDC. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, commissioners. Quickly go through. I just wanted to give a sort of a better understanding of the rates we charged on the sewer side. Scott mentioned we were going to do this, just ran out of time on the water side. But to quickly go through, I did take snapshots from our website that Nick and his group put together and publish every year for any rate changes. So as Scott mentioned, just real quickly, the majority, about a little over half of our revenue source for on the wastewater side, sewer, is from ad valorem. It's about $51.5 million. And as Scott and Tom presented in the last presentation, we do receive about $7.3 million from sludge and septage. On the sewer side, we do have our customer service charge, which is $7 per month per connection, and that provides a revenue source of about $7.5 million annually for us. And that is, as Scott mentioned in other conversations, that provides our private property work to investigate backups, unclog sewer laterals, investigate the repairs, and provide essentially the 24/7 emergency response that we have through our command center and operations division. We also have our sewer user charge, which I'm going to break down. This is essentially the charge that we apply to the tax-exempt organizations, municipalities, hospitals, churches, and other tax-exempt buildings and properties. They're not subject as part of the ad valorem. So to recover their the cost to provide them the sewer service, we do charge $5.31 per 100 cubic yards, cubic feet of water service that we provide them. There are some new nuances associated with this that was part of the shift across the country in 1978 and early 80s to move certain organizations off of ad valorem into a sewer user. I'm going to get into those, and those are more around the specific concentrations of parameters such as COD, BOD, and total suspended solids. I also just wanted to quickly put up the Clean Water Project surcharge that is applied to all the member towns that have member town customers that have sewer connections, and that is billed off of the water meter readings. Oops, sorry.
Any further?
Any questions on the last slide? I apologize. Okay.
We'll move to questions. I guess we have no further questions.
Commissioner Taylor, I don't know, you may be muted.
Commissioner who?
Commissioner Taylor, I don't know if he was.
Al Taylor? Commissioner Taylor?
Yeah, I guess I'm on now.
Okay, yes, sir. Go
yeah,
right ahead.
I guess one of the things that I think that we do not do enough of is that I think we need to see more comparisons in terms of what our customers are paying compared to other jurisdictions. You know, people are always yelling about what they're paying for water or for sewer user charges or whatever else. But I have a feeling that when you look at what people are paying in other jurisdictions, that that people are not knowledgeable about that. And I guess I would want us to think carefully about publishing comparisons so that people can know and understand basically what it is they're getting and what it is they're paying for.
Definitely. And Scott, I believe I could provide some comparison from some of the other utilities based on their sewer user charge for water discharge based on meter readings.
But I think that this needs to be provided on an ongoing basis to our customer or customer base, you know, because people are always, you know, complaining that, you know, their prices are going up. But, you know, it's very interesting. If you look at what people pay for water and then you look at what people spend on things like cable, and those damn bills are going up all the time. And you don't see people, you know, storming the cable company, but, you know, for what we're doing and what we're providing, you would think that we're engaging in outright bank robbery.
Well,
you're right. You're right, Al. That's a good point.
Commissioner, to your point, the MDC had a 0% increase in the sewer system this year.
Zero.
And right, we had less than a 1% increase, and yet you saw all the bills down at the legislature associated with somehow the MDC needs to be micromanaged. It's ironic. It's an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment to the people that would even suggest that the MDC is not doing a good job. We are doing 5 to 10 times more construction activity than any utility in the area, including our agency in New England, Connecticut Water, and Aquarion, and our water rate was less than 1% increase. Connecticut Water increased their water bill by $10 per month, approved by PURA this year, for capital investment. We increased our water bill by less than 1%. It's embarrassing that we're having any discussion at the legislature that the MDC is doing something wrong.
Well, I just think it's something that we probably should be thinking about and focusing on.
Further questions?
Through you, Mr. Chairman. This is Commissioner Torres.
Torres, yes, sir.
Yeah. What? Once again, I think you know this is so important. You know, being in Hartford for many, many years and going through the same issues that NDC does, getting, you know, bad rap for, you know, for people who don't know what's going on. And it's the same issues that I think is affecting NDC. But I think it's critically important that so that they understand that we are transparent, that we issue periodically a matrix of sorts that compares what other places are paying for their services as opposed to NDC, and let people see it up front graphically, you know, and say, look, you know, we are transparent. You know, we're not hiding anything here. This is what it is. And let them make their own, come to their own conclusions about how well and how efficient the MDC operates.
I agree 100%. I agree with you 100%. But yet, if you look, if we have done that, we've got legislators in our surrounding areas, like South Windsor, that would argue that we should be overregulated by PURA. We should be audited by the state of Connecticut. And yet within that same community, they have a private water utility, which is the rates are almost double the MDC. It's sad. It's almost impossible to override, but I agree with you. But when you have the legislative groups that are really beating us up for no reason other than politics, it's really difficult to overcome that.
Commissioner, then we should publish, excuse me, through you, Mr. Chairman, then we should, you know, if that's the case, then let's make our case a public case, and let's take out a one page, you know, ad on in the newspapers or whatever we have to do, and put it out there and say, this is the reality, and you folks want to micromanage the MDC.
If I could make a statement
through you, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Hoffman.
Chairman Hoffman.
Yes.
Ray Sweezy.
Yes.
I agree with Scott, but Al's got the point. We got to get this out there. We got to, and it's not to the residents as much. It's to the mayor of West Hartford. It's to the deputy mayor. You read what they said last week. The deputy mayor of Bloomfield, the state senator from Middletown, the state rep from Rocky Hill. They're putting all kinds of remarks out there, but they don't understand we're one of the lowest costs in the state of Connecticut. We had a zero increase last year. Like Scott said, we had approximately a 1% on the water side. I mean, I don't know what they want. So somehow we have to educate the state senators and the state reps that just, and the mayors and deputy mayors and councils that just do not support us. And if it's a full page ad or if it's just a, you know, a couple pages that is sent to them over and over and over until they get it, I don't know what we do, but we got to do something.
Yeah,
I know, right. Between Chris Levesque and Nick Salemi, they could put together a tremendous one or two pager that would show these facts, and we got to get them out there because we got to change the attitude of these state senators, mayors, and deputy mayors.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Commissioner Patel.
Yeah, I spoke with my state representative. I spoke with my senator here also, and I tried to explain them there is nothing. You are duplicating all efforts, but I think we need to have enough pressure from the public, not these guys, because they don't listen to individuals. So we need to do better PR.
Yeah. One of the, Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Commissioner DiBella, one
yes,
of the major problems is we provide this information to the current, we provide it to the public agencies that carry this information. And we can't force them to print it. That's one of our problems. And I think you're right, Scott. When I listened to the senator, a good senator from Middletown, and, of course, his position on many things is so distorted that he makes on legislation he deals with. But that's what we've got to deal with. We have to deal with those people. Our Hartford delegation we have no problem with. We don't have problem with our East Hartford delegation. And we provide this information in our budget considerations. We compare ourselves to other geographical areas. We compare our water rates to all of our competitors, both public and private. And regardless of what you'll see that we are significantly, with all the costs we're carrying for the clean water project on the water side, we are still cheaper than the other publics and significantly cheaper than the private companies. And you're right. We're going to have to get out there and do that. But when you present this information even to our people in West Hartford, what do we get? We get a mayor who doesn't either acknowledge or understand the factors that we're dealing with. And we've been improving that relationship, much of which is the result of our issues that we're having with West Hartford on sewer user charge and also the stormwater issue. I think the stormwater issue, they're starting to come around on. The sewer user charge, they're not.
Yeah. Further commissioner comments?
Through you, Mr. Chairman. This is Commissioner Rick Bush.
Yes, thanks, Commissioner Bush.
Hey, I just want to say that this conversation is extraordinarily stressful, and it is so frustrating to hear the level of ignorance that is rampant in our legislature as it relates to the MDC and many other issues I've been following for the last several weeks. It is distressful. I did testify last week. You know, whether it helped or hurt, I don't know. But, you know, if there's anything, I have no problem talking to people, the mayor of West Hartford and whoever I need to talk to again to move this forward. I do agree that we should definitely be putting op-eds or taking out advertisements and getting our information published. It's very stressful to have this conversation. So I'm available to do whatever I, you know, if I'm tapped to do anything, I'm available.
Thank you.
Mr. Hoffman?
Yes. Mr. Taylor.
I have two comments. I think that we're going to have to basically start buying space in local publications.
Probably right.
Publishing our matrices. And I think it's got to be simple. It's got to be on a fairly comparative basis so that people can just look at the numbers, and then we'll let the chips fall where they may. The other question that I have, and it's a general one, is what's the situation with regard to the dikes in terms of what state are they in presently, particularly as regards to we got a couple of billion dollars worth of plant and equipment down there in the meadows. Do we have any current status as to what the situation is with regard to the dikes and what the future prospects are? And is any of that work going to be covered under any of the proposed infrastructure work that we think may be coming out of the Biden administration?
As you know, we presented numerous technical presentations from the engineering firm GEI that we have hired and actually was doing work for the city of Hartford. Hartford a program with the Army Corps of Engineers. Their job is to with a much less $27 million. East Hartford has done a much better job, to be honest with you, in terms of implementing the recommendations from the Army Corps. You know, unfortunately, the city of Hartford has said the chairman and I were at meetings in 2018, and it continues to be we can't afford it, we can't afford it, we can't afford it. So I don't know. The answer is we've been extremely proactive since 2012 on this issue, to the point of most people saying, why is the MDC so concerned about the dike system in Hartford? And well, because we just invested $1 billion worth of money in our Hartford treatment plant, and if the Hartford treatment plant goes down, then all of our service to our communities will be halted, and then we'll wind up with an extreme expense to all of our customers. So, you know, the Army Corps, and I was bringing this up at the Water Bureau, and I obviously it went on a long time, but the Army Corps has its own priorities, and unfortunately, New England, Hartford is not it. So the city of Hartford is going to have to invest the money that they need to invest to protect we've said before, 25% of the grand list in Hartford is protected by the dike. Without the dike, if you lose 20% of the grand list in Hartford, then 25% of the grand list has to be shared with all other seven towns. And that's a big number. There's really not a lot going on right now in Hartford with protecting the dike.
Okay. But, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Ray Sweezy. But Scott, to your point, Hartford, if they want to do anything in the South Meadows, I mean, bring in large corporations, bring in anything large, wouldn't a company look at the possible problem before they come and say, hey, I'm not moving in there? I mean, sure. The city of Hartford and the city of East Hartford, they're the two cities that really have to step up to this.
Yes.
We'll leave that for another day.
Yeah, I think this is for another day, but Ray, you're right. That would be one of the considerations that anybody that was coming into Hartford would look at a dike problem that could wipe out 25% of the grand list in Hartford. So that is a priority. It's a priority in the reconstruction of the interchange. That's one of the key factors in that issue that Larson has raised. But again, we've been trying to pursue that, and it's really, if you look at it, is the responsibility of the state of Connecticut DOT. They're the ones that took the earth barrier out when they dropped the highway and never put sheeting in. So, listen, we've got a lot we could discuss just in this issue alone. But I'm going to have to sign off, guys, but thank you.
Were there any further comments from commissioners, questions? If not, I don't believe that there's anyone on the call from the general public.
Yes, there is.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'd like to make a comment.
Yes, it sounds like Judy
Allen. This is Judy Allen. I appreciate your frustration with trying to get the public and the legislators to understand all the hard work you're doing. And I understand that when you compare rates with other water utilities, ours look pretty good. I also have heard at the budget time when you're going to set rates, commissioners saying this is unsustainable. We have to find a new way to do this. The legislation, while it's not perfect, that was recommended has three parts, and the middle part was about creating a task force to look at the MDC charter. The charter is so out of date. There are over 80 sections in the charter that have not changed since 1929. There's a piece, 1931, a piece about eminent domain that deals with infants, insane persons, and married women, as though they need to be treated specially for some reason. I urge you not only to be out there talking about what you're doing well, but to listen to what people are really saying. That yes, they don't like the rates, but they're concerned about your model, the way you set rates, and that the charter keeps getting in the way of you doing anything different. That's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, this is Dave Silverstone. A quick comment, if I may.
Yes, absolutely, Dave.
Thank you. I hadn't intended on making a comment, but I would, given the conversation with regard to rates and the publicity thereof, I would urge you to do that very carefully. You may remember that a couple of years ago, we got into a bit of a discussion about water rates versus customers' bills. And while water rates deal with water, the customer bills deal with water and sewer and, most importantly, the clean water charge. So when you start doing comparisons, while I certainly agree that water rates are among the lowest in the state, water bills, which include these other charges, are probably not. And it's worth taking another look at, although I did look at this a couple of years ago, but it's worth taking another look at. My real message, though, tonight is please do this rather cautiously. The worst thing you can do is put out information that other people may find fault with. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Further comments from the public? Hearing none, final call to the commissioners for questions, comments. And hearing none.
Move adjournment.
Thank you,
second.
Sir. Thank you. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
All right.